At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Full Draw Friday number 65. Apologies for not getting an episode out this Monday. We had some stuff lined up. I dropped the ball on it, and we didn't end up getting recorded when I wanted to get recorded. So we will be back this Monday with our regularly scheduled programming. But again, apologies for not getting an episode out Monday of this past week. However, today we're going to be talking about the final part to our Deer Hunting 101 series, and this is going to be how to hunt. I'm not going to get completely down into the weeds about how. This is going to be, just like the rest of the series, a 30,000-foot view, if you will, of how to hunt. There are hundreds of hours on our own podcast talking about how to hunt, let alone all over the internet of different stuff you could talk about. So again, this is going to be very broad viewed. We're not going to get in the weeds on much of anything. I just want to give the basics to round out this series. First part, we talked about what you need to hunt. Second part, we talked about where and when. Now we're going to get into the how on Full Draw Friday number 65. Okay, the first thing I want to start with, and this is something that maybe some people might say it's not basic, but at its core level, I think it is very, very basic when it comes to hunting, but it's also something a lot of people miss and is a mistake a lot of people make, and it cost them some deer, cost them some hunts. So that's why I wanted to lead off with this thing and make sure, if you take nothing else away from this, that this is a foundation of what you do when it comes to how to hunt, and that is paying attention to the wind. I don't care what kind of scent control you do. I don't care how many scent crusher products or scent away or whatever you're using nowadays. If you do not pay attention to the wind, it does not matter. Ozone stuff, whatever. It might help. It might knock down your footprint as far as your scent goes, how far it's carrying and how far away a deer can smell you. But if there's deer downwind of you, and especially if you're bow hunting, if they're in range, they're going to smell you. You have to make sure that you have the right wind for where you're hunting in order to have success. That's not to say that sometimes deer won't go downwind of you, and they might catch a whiff and just keep walking. During the rut, a buck might be on a doe. He might go around to the downwind side where she went upwind, and he's maybe so focused on her, he doesn't even care what he caught a whiff of or if he even did. But in general, if there's deer downwind of you, that's a very bad thing. If you're trying to kill them, at least. If you're wanting to let them know that you're there and you want to watch them run off with their tail in the air, then that's great. Have them be downwind of you all you want. I try not to do that. Sometimes it happens, especially depending on where you're hunting. If you're hunting one of those timber sets or even, you know, some field edge sets or even food plot sets, if you're in there, there's a chance the deer are going to go downwind of you. I mean, it's just, unless you can back yourself up to something super steep like a bluff, or maybe you've got a big lake behind you, or you're right on the edge of something like that, or a big river potentially, then they're not going to get downwind of you. But most cases, you don't have that, and there's some chance that deer are going to get downwind. So we're not necessarily, our goal is not to eliminate all potential for deer to get downwind of us, because that's, in most cases, impossible. However, you want to limit as much as possible the amount of deer that can. How do you do that? Pay attention to what's being called in the weather forecast. That's a starter to figure out where you're going to want to go hunt. And then when you get to your spot, or go outside, whatever it is, and check them, because sometimes that can vary. It might say for your area, it's supposed to be a northwest wind, you go outside and it's blowing out of the southeast. It has happened. Everybody knows that the weather predictions are not always the best, so make sure you check them. Don't just solely rely on that. But the idea is for you to hunt downwind of where you think most of the deer activity is going to be. So wherever that trail is that they're using, or that food source, or the crossing on the creek, or whatever it is, make sure that you are downwind of that and you're not upwind of it. If your wind is blowing towards that, you're in bad shape. It's pretty easy to understand, I think. Whichever way the wind's blowing, you want it blowing at you. Think about it being in your face and away from the deer. There's, again, a lot of stuff you can get into the weeds on the wind in different directions and when to do certain things and when it switches from one to the other, yada, yada, yada. The biggest thing, make sure that wherever the deer are going to be is upwind of wherever you're going to be hunting. Also, when you're walking in and walking out, you do not want your wind blowing over where you potentially think the deer are bedded or feeding for a prolonged period of time. You can get away with walking by a small little strip, in my opinion, if they catch a little bit of a whiff, probably not going to bother them too bad. They're not just going to get up and run off. If they did that every time they smelled something they didn't like, they would never stop. But you don't want it consistently blowing across an area you think the deer are at while you're walking in or walking out. So keep that in mind as well. Another thing that kind of goes right along with wind, and again, it could seem very complicated, but at its core is also very basic and it plays right into the wind, are thermals. Thermals make more of a difference if you have more difference in terrain and topography and things like that. For most of the whitetail range, if you're not in the mountains, let's say in the southeast or out east, if you're not in the mountains out west or some of the big hill country that there is throughout their range, most of the time they're going to play a little bit of a factor, but not as much as those areas. So in general, your thermals are going with the sun. If the sun's going up, your thermals are going up. If the sun's coming down, your thermals are going down. Pressure plays a role. Atmospheric pressure plays a role in that. So if you have a high pressure, especially, let's say, high pressure or rising pressure in the morning with the sun coming up, your thermals will really rise. And you can get away with hunting just about anywhere because the deer aren't going to smell you. We did a hunt just the other day, just like that. The predicted wind direction was not great for where we were at. However, because of the wind speed, which is a big thing when we're talking about this, if it's, you know, 5 miles per hour or less, your thermals are going to play a huge factor. If it's more than that and you've got some sustained winds, then they're not going to matter as much. But because we had that the other day, while our wind at the stand level was blowing in the wrong direction just for about, I don't know, a foot and a half, shortly after that, it was just going straight up. So all of our wind was blowing, all of our scent was blowing over the deer's head, which is an ideal scenario. So even in hill country and stuff, and if you've got big ridges and whatnot, a good way to think about it is hunt with the sun. If the sun's going down, hunt low. Low in the evenings, high in the mornings. If the sun's coming up, hunt high. That way your thermals aren't blowing up the hill towards the deer, and they're not coming, pulling down the hill, blowing towards the deer in the evenings. Just keep those things in mind when it comes to wind, and you will have a lot more successful hunts than if you don't pay any attention to it at all. Entry and exit. I hit on it just a little bit with the wind. This is another one. You can get pretty complicated on how you do it, but the basics of it are don't enter into a place where your wind is going to be consistently blowing over a bedding area if you're going in the evening, or a feeding area if you're going in the afternoon. And along that line, do not walk through food to go to a stand in the mornings. Do not walk through food to leave a stand in the afternoons. And do not walk through bedding to go to a stand in the afternoon. And do not walk through bedding to leave a stand in the morning. If you got to rewind that and listen to it again to make sure you got it, make sure you go do that, because it could sound a little confusing, but it's really not once you get the hang of it. Why I say that is when you're hunting in the mornings, you're usually coming in while deer are out in their feeding areas, their destination food fields. So if you walk through that as you're going in the morning, you're going to blow out the entire field. You're not going to see any deer. You're trying to catch them coming from their food to their bed. So you might have better luck walking through a bedding area or closer to a bedding area, going in the mornings. And then when you leave in the mornings, walk out through the food because they've already left, they've already gone back to bed. I switch that around in the afternoons, go through the food source to get to your stand, go out through the bedding. Obviously, that is not always possible. You got to do the best you can do. If you only have one place to hunt and your entry and exit is through food, you can get creative with ways of doing it. You can, if you can have somebody, like in the evenings, if you have to walk out through that food source, if you could have somebody drive up in a side-by-side or a pickup truck or something, honk the horn, whatever, and clear that field with a vehicle, that's going to be a lot better, a lot more tolerable for them than if you just walk out and they see a person walking through there. They do not like that at all. Another thing you can do is wait till it's dark to get down out of your stand in the evening, or go in dark in the mornings if you have to. Deer are way less spooked by people at night for whatever reason than they are in the daytime. I don't know if it's a vision thing and their ability to see and all that, but you can get away with quite a bit bothering deer if you do it after dark. I've got down out of stands before plenty after dark with deer in a food plot. Yes, they hopped out of the food plot when I got down, but they came right back. I had pictures of them within 5 minutes. They were back on the field. Additionally, 2 years ago, the buck I shot, we named Ghost, that we didn't end up finding, the night before I shot him, he came out in the cut corn and just never made it over to where I was at. I did have a little bit of wind. I slipped down the backside of the tree, though, at dark with him, 100 yards away probably, got out of there, and then the next evening he was right back. I don't know if they even ever knew I was there because I waited till dark. So if you have to go through a spot that's not ideal in the morning or in the evening, either one, you can do it in the cover of darkness. That really helps. Don't be waving a flashlight around everywhere. I understand if you want to use a flashlight, just have some discipline with it and keep it down low at your feet. Especially if you're like a public land guy, you're hunting some permission property where there might be other people, for sure use a flashlight. I think I talked about that on one of the other parts of this series, but just don't be waving it around throughout the woods, throughout the field and stuff like that, letting them know you're coming. So that's entry and exit basics. Hopefully that clears some of that up. Another big one I want to hit on is movement, and this is in the stand. One big problem that people have is they can't sit still. And I'm not saying you got to be a statue for 2.5 hours up in the tree stand, but you have to limit your movement, especially your big movements, fast movements, anything like that, that's going to catch a deer's attention. Ideally, if you're in a tree stand, you're above their line of sight. However, if you make a big movement or a sudden movement, they might catch that out of the corner of their eye. Deer's eyes are on the side of their head. Their pupils are horizontal. They have a lot wider field of vision than we do. They can see. They see a lot differently than we do, so they can catch that movement instead of where our field of vision is pretty limited. So if something off to our side moves up in a tree, we're probably not going to see it. They're going to see that. And the reason I say you have to be still very limited with your movement for the whole time, like I said, you don't have to be a statue for 2.5 hours, but you need to be careful about how you're moving, even if you're not seeing deer, because just because you can't see them doesn't mean they can't see you. Especially mature deer, especially mature bucks, they might stop and survey an opening or an open area or any area for that matter. If it makes them a little bit uncomfortable, they might survey that for like 5 minutes. They could stand there. I've seen bucks get up out of their bed. I've seen bucks come to the edge of a food plot or to the edge of a clearing, a little grass patch in the middle of some pretty thick stuff, and just stop and look across that thing for a long, long time before they either decide to go through it or turn around and go back the other way. So there, at any moment, there could be a buck standing behind three trees over just looking for some dummy in a tree to move too much so he can turn around and go the other way. So just keep that in mind. Movement is a big thing. It doesn't matter how great your camo is. Doesn't matter how bad your camo is. If you're moving all the time, they're still going to see you. I do believe in a good camo pattern. I think I talked about that on the What You Need episode. But it doesn't matter what kind of camo you got unless it makes you invisible. If you're moving around up there, they are going to see you. The next one I want to hit on is calling. This is big, especially the time of year we're getting into now. And I talked about on the What You Need about getting calls, at the very basic minimum, a grunt tube. But if you've got a grunt tube and a bleat call and some rattling antlers, they can be really good And I would, again, baseline, get you a grunt tube to go out there if you're trying to kill a buck. There's so many different directions and philosophies on calling. And again, more weeds to get into on that. But at the very basic level, if you see a buck out cruising at a distance, you can give him a little grunt, just enough to get his attention. You'll know if he hears it or not based on how he reacts. If his ears perk up and he looks your direction, don't grunt again. Wait for him to look back down, or he might come to you. He might not ever come. He might not act like he hears it, even though he does hear it. You can overdo it with calling, so don't overdo it. If you think, gosh, he should have heard me, but he didn't act like he did, he probably did hear you, and there's a chance he'll come back around later. Same way, if he acts like he hears you, but he doesn't come right away, he might swing back around later. So, again, make sure you're being still up there, because you just never know when he's going to come back. But if you're calling at them, read their body language, see if he seems interested. If he doesn't seem interested, give him another call. And if you're satisfied after that, he should have heard it, then he probably did. He either didn't care, or he noted that, and he'll come back around to it after he gets done doing what he's doing. Same way with does. I used to bleat at does all the time when I was just trying to kill anything. And especially a big doe group, if you give them a bleat call and they can hear it, there's a good chance they're going to come in looking for a fawn or something, or another doe. What's going on with them? It can be difficult. Like, say, if you're on the ground or you're not very high off the ground and you have all those eyeballs from a doe herd coming in at you looking for a call, but it can be done. So even if you're just trying to shoot a doe, maybe don't grunt at her, because that might run a doe off because she's not looking to get harassed by a buck, but you can give her a little bleat call and it might be enough to bring her into range. So there's nothing says you can't call at does just like you can bucks. Just make sure you're using the right calls. And with rattling, if you see the deer, same principles as your grunt tube. It's just an option to reach out there a little bit farther with your sound and give you a little more range on your calling. You're going to be able to call deer from farther with your rattling antlers or your rattle bag, whatever it is, than you are with your grunt tube. Don't overdo it. If they look, maybe give them like another half second and then quit, because they're looking to see movement over there. They're looking to see if they can see another deer. If you don't have a decoy or something and they have a clear line of vision to you and they know there's nothing over there, they're probably not coming. If they look over there and you're up there rattling and they catch you moving up in the tree, they're definitely not coming. So keep that in mind when you're calling, but though that's kind of the basics, very baseline for calling. Another big thing is shooting lanes. And this is a little bit of where to hunt, I guess. But a lot of times you're not going to be able to find the perfect place to where you can shoot everywhere you want to. There is an art, I think, to cutting shooting lanes and leaving yourself enough cover while also giving yourself a big enough window to shoot a deer. You don't want to get up in a tree that's way too thick where you can't see anything, for one, and you can't shoot anywhere, because if the deer comes by and you can't shoot at it, what good are you doing? You don't want to be in a tree that's too open where you can shoot 360 degrees, but they can see you from everywhere as well. You're not going to have any opportunity to draw your bow if that's what you're doing, or even get your gun up and aim at them. And also, it doesn't take a ton of movement at all if there's no cover for you for them to pick you out off the side of a tree. It just looks goofy to them, especially if it's a normal place getting close to their bed or close to their food where they're used to seeing the same stuff every day for the most part. If they see something different up there hanging off the side of a tree, they might freak out. So we're looking for usually a spot that has some cover on it, whether that be limbs right where you're at or a lot of brushy stuff up above you. You always want to try to have something behind you. We call that back cover. That way they can't skyline you. But when it comes to cutting those shooting lanes, just don't cut too much. Make sure you cut enough. Don't cut too much. You might have to get down and cut some stuff on the ground. You're definitely probably going to have to cut some stuff in the tree. All the little twigs and things that you're not going to be able to see after sunset or just before sunrise, make sure you get those out of the way. Anything that's in an obvious place a deer would be coming, so if you have a trail out in front of you to your left and there's limbs on that side, but it's clear over to your right, don't think it's clear over there, I'm fine. Go ahead and cut your lane to that trail over to your left, because that's probably where the deer are going to be. So cutting your shooting lanes is a big one for how to hunt that I think gets overlooked as well. You don't want to just climb up in a tree and not have a pruning saw or something to give yourself the opportunity to shoot. If you're like most hunters out there, at some point, you've dreamed of having a piece of hunting ground to call your own. Maybe you finally decided to make those dreams a reality? If so, you need to talk to our guy, Rodney Hawkins. Rodney is a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. If you haven't heard of them, they aren't your average real estate company. While they do deal in traditional residential and commercial real estate, their specialty is recreational and farm ground. With agents like Rodney serving across the state of Illinois, no matter what you're looking for, they can find it. Even if you want to sell what you already have to upgrade, downgrade, reinvest, whatever, they've got you covered. For more information, you can contact Rodney at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. On top of what he does for MFL, Rodney also has his own company called RG Outdoors. They currently carry hard and soft-sided blinds, blind chairs, tree stands, and cameras from Radix Hunting, Tacticam trail cameras, Fission e-bikes, and he's adding new stuff all the time. I've personally used all of these products, and I'm beyond happy with every one of them. The Fission e-bike is a game changer, and you will not find a better one for the price. If you're interested in anything RG Outdoors has to offer, you can send them a message to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors, email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. When to draw or aim. So when that deer comes into your shooting lane, when should you draw back on that thing? And this is, again, more for bow hunting than it is for gun, because you can have your gun up and ready for a long time, and then as soon as they get in your shooting lane, you get down on the gun and you stop them, you pull the trigger. That's easy enough. You're not holding any weight necessarily, unless you don't have a rest or something. And even in that case, you can hold the gun at a low ready, and then when they get in your lane, pull it up and take the shot. When it comes to bow hunting, vertical bow, traditional bow, whatever, anything you have to draw, it makes a big difference. Not only do you have to draw that and hold it potentially for a long time, if you draw too early or if a deer stops, you also have to make that movement. That's a movement that you have to make, and it can be a pretty drastic movement. So, again, there's different philosophies on it, but I always try to wait as long as I think I can before I draw. So almost when that deer is in my shooting lane, they're almost in the shooting lane, or they finally get into, let's say, 25 yards, but they're looking at me, I'll wait till they, or they're facing me directionally. I'll wait till they get broadside if they got their head down or something, or if they've got their head turned, then I'll go ahead and draw. I don't want to do it if their head's up looking in my direction. Even if they're not looking up at me, they're looking in that direction, they'll catch that movement. So keep that in mind. But I try to wait as long as I can. If it's a walking deer, just before they step into that gap, I'm going to draw. If it's a standing deer, I'm going to wait till they're in a position where I can make the shot and they're looking away or they're looking down feeding, then I'm going to draw. That way I don't have to hold it. And sometimes, you know, it's going to happen. Nate had a buck last year. If you guys watched Fall Pursuit, you saw it. He got behind a tree, so Nate drew, and then some other deer were coming in from their right, and he just stopped dead in his tracks, and Nate had to hold that for almost a minute before he finally decided to move again. So it's going to happen, but you might as well try to avoid it as much as you can, because we all know that I've hunted, and maybe you don't yet, but you'll figure it out. If you got to hold that bow for a while, you start getting shaky, you get tired, and it's harder to make a good shot. Speaking of making a good shot, shot placement is the next thing I want to cover. On a white-tailed deer, we generally split them into thirds, both vertically and horizontally. So from front to back, you can kind of split them front third, middle third, back third. If you're in the front third, there's a lot of stuff you can hit to kill them. If you're in the middle third, there is some stuff you can hit to kill them. And if you're in the back third, there are very few things you can hit to kill them. If you hit those things, they will die very fast. Talking about like the femoral artery. They'll bleed out very quickly if you hit that. I've done it before, obviously not on purpose. I hit a limb on the particular deer I'm thinking of, and the arrow kicked back and went right in there. I got lucky, hit right by his tenderloins, cut that femoral artery, and he died within like 50 yards in a matter of seconds. However, that's not a good aiming spot. Same thing, you know, vertically, the thirds. The bottom third, there's some stuff that you can hit. The heart I would consider in the bottom third, but there's a lot of room down there to miss stuff. The middle third is where all the goodies are going to be for the most part, and the top third, there's almost nothing other than that artery. So we're looking for front third horizontally from front to back and middle third from top to bottom, but more specifically behind the deer's shoulder. I try to get as tight to the shoulder as I can. I shoot fixed blade broadheads. I shoot 70 pounds at like a 28 and a half or 29 inch draw with between 500 and 575 grain total arrow setup. So I've got some knockdown with that. So I'm not as worried about hitting the shoulder. If I was shooting a lighter setup with a bigger cutting expandable, I would want to hold off the shoulder just a hair, not very much. I'm not still aiming at their guts. I mean, I'm not aiming at their guts, but I'm right on their lungs, a little bit off of that shoulder, so I don't have to worry about it as much. So your setup will kind of depend how tight to the shoulder, but generally, right behind their front shoulder, that if you're thinking about those thirds, those the lines moving vertically, so up and down, the bottom line, there would be two lines on the deer, and it's almost their hairline where their white hair meets their brown hair. Most of the time, I would aim at that line. If they're really close and it's a really steep angle, obviously you have to adjust for your angle, aim a little higher. If they're farther out there, if it's quiet, you want to aim lower because they'll drop. We'll probably do some YouTube videos maybe on deer dropping and jumping your string, they call it. But most of the time, aim somewhere right between that bottom third and middle third, up and down, right behind the shoulder. You're going to be in good shape. The biggest rule of thumb, I think it's easiest to understand, is aim for your exit. So aim for where you want that arrow to come out or that bullet, whatever it is. If you're using a gun, you can pretty much hold it right on the front shoulder and you're golden. With a bow, you can't do that because there's a lot of hard bone in there, a lot of heavy bone that you might not get through. But we're aiming for our exit. So if the deer is quartering to us, that's not always a great shot, again, depending on your setup, depending on how far they are, but we want to aim to where that arrow is going to come out in a good spot. Through bait, I mean, depending on how hard they're quartering, maybe you're super tight to the shoulder, maybe you're on part of the shoulder, maybe you're in front of the shoulder. If they're quartering away, aim to exit the offside shoulder is a good place to aim at. So wherever that front leg is on the other side of the deer, go up from it, and that's where you're going to hit all the good stuff. The heart, the lungs is going to be up in there. Quartering away, slightly quartered away at like 20 yards, that's not too steep, and you can get that thing to come out through their offside shoulder or just bury in their offside shoulder, that deer is going to be dead very quickly. It's a very efficient shot. It's one of the best in archery. So if you've got that, you're in good shape. But just know those when it comes to shot placement. There are a lot of places, again, you can hit a deer that's going to kill them, but we want to try to be as fair to the game as possible. We want to try to make it efficient. And it's going to help us recover more deer as well. After the shot, another one that doesn't get talked about probably nearly as much. So you go through all this stuff, and you shoot your deer. Now what do? The last thing you want to do is mess it up now, right? So if you know you 12-ringed the thing, and you shot it right through the heart, and they did a big mule kick and you see blood all over the ground and everything like that, that's great. Still give them a half hour. Unless you saw them go down with your own eyes and you know they're dead, give them a minimum 30 minutes. Even if you just know you smoked them, even if you got it on video, give them a half hour. And it ain't that hard to do. You sit in your stand for a second, you get all your stuff packed up, you get it down, maybe you walk back to the truck, whatever it is, and then you go back in, there's your 30 minutes. If you hit them not so good, get down on the ground, try to find where the shot was at. And I would wait a little bit before you even get down, because if that deer didn't go very far, it might bed soon. And the closer it beds to you, the shorter blood trail you're going to have to get if you don't bump them out of the bed. And that's the biggest thing when it comes to after the shot and blood trailing, is bumping those deer. And you want to avoid that at all cost. So if you make a questionable shot, or you're not sure, or you didn't see them go down, give it, again, that 30 minutes, maybe even an hour, before you even get down out of the stand. Then you can go find your arrow, if it went all the way through them. If it didn't, try to find where they were standing when you shot them. That's another thing there. Try to make mental notes where the deer are standing. And if you see them run off, make mental notes. Okay, he went by this tree on the south side, or maybe he went on the north side of that tree, whatever it is. Make those notes in your head. It's going to make your trailing a lot easier when it comes to tracking those deer after the shot. But if you can find where you shot them, start looking for blood. If there's not a lot right away, take their direction of travel into consideration and look for more. I have done podcasts on blood trailing before. You can listen to those on tracking. There's a lot out there about the different types of blood that you're going to see. There's a lot out there about what it could mean. In general, really quick, down and dirty version of it, bright red blood is usually some kind of muscle hit if it has no other color to it. If it's just bright red, there's no foamy stuff in it, there's no darker red mixed in with it, just bright red blood. If you think you might have made a marginal shot on that deer high or even low, or hit him in a ham or something like that, or parts of the neck, and it's just all bright red blood, it's very likely that's not a dead deer, and they can bleed a lot on those kind of hits. If it is pretty bright red blood, but there's some darker stuff mixed into it, but no frothy stuff and bubbles in it, like very obvious bubbles, that's can be misleading when people talk about bubbles, because there can be air bubbles from the blood just running through the deer's hair or falling on the ground. It'll kind of aerate it a little bit and create bubbles in it. But we're talking about like soda fizz type bubbles when it comes to lung shots. But if there's none of that in it, and it's that bright red mixed in with a little bit of darker red, that's generally your heart blood. As again, general rule of thumb. If you do see the frothy stuff, the soda fizz type of bubbles, that's usually lung, and that'll be a lighter color of red, almost a pinkish color in there. If you've got bright red, a little bit of dark red, and then that pinky, pink frothy kind of blood, you're in really good shape. That's a dead deer 99% of the time. Within 200 yards, you're going to find that deer. If it's just really dark, almost maroon type of blood, and there's no bubbles in it, and you think you hit the deer back potentially, that's probably liver blood. If especially if there's no like stomach content, if the arrow doesn't stink really, really bad, but you hit him back and you're seeing that darker blood, that's probably liver blood. That deer is going to take a few hours to die, but it will be dead at some point if you don't bump it. Good chance of recovering that deer. If you go farther back from that, if you get some blood with like some yellowish or greenish color in it, and let's say your arrow had some just junk on it and it smelled really awful, that's your gut shot. And that deer will, a lot of times when you hit them back there, will hunch up and arch their back, and they'll walk off pretty slowly. That's not good. That deer will probably expire, but it's going to be a long time. We're talking like upwards of 12, 18, 24 hours in some cases. So you absolutely do not want to bump that deer. Any farther back than that, you're probably talking about that muscle blood. If you get that bright red blood by itself, but it is just everywhere, and I don't mean like walking blood trail looks pretty good, I mean just everywhere. You might have got an artery, like that femoral artery. A lot of times it will spray out of there too because it's pressurized, so you'll see it up on trees and stuff. It's a higher hit especially. You'll know in that case, like if you think, I don't know if this is an artery hit or not, it probably wasn't. If you think, there's a ton of blood, I had to have hit that artery, you probably did. And you're probably going to find that deer easily within 100 yards. I mean, they'll bleed out fast if you hit those things, if you get lucky and do that. So that's the down and dirty of what the blood looks like, what that could mean. So again, take all that in consideration. Then when you start tracking, don't just take off in the direction you thought the deer went. If you didn't see him go down, if you shine your flashlight out there and you don't see him and you got to go on the blood, just go on the blood. Every now and then, once you get 10 or 20 yards, maybe take a peek up ahead. But other than that, don't just take off wandering. If you're still on the blood, stay on the blood. Don't get ahead of yourself. It's really easy, especially on some of these blood trails that get spotty. And you can have a pretty good hit on a deer and have a spotty blood trail. A high lung hit one is one that comes to mind. There's potential, even if that deer's dead within 200 yards, the blood trail might not be great. So if you get too far ahead of yourself and start walking through and crunching leaves, you could be flipping stuff over that had specks of blood on it that you might have seen otherwise, but now you're not. You don't end up recovering that deer. Instead of, if you stay on the blood and you stop and you look and you look and you look some more until you find some, then move up. I always try to mark the last blood with something too. If it's a buddy, if it's a person that you can leave the last blood, that's great. If you're by yourself or if you're both trying to stay and try to find the blood on a tough track, stick an arrow in the ground, take a stick and stand it straight up to where you can obviously see it and go back to that last blood. Because sometimes deer will do funny things. I've had them backtrack as far as 50, 60 yards straight down the same blood trail they were on. We didn't even know it until we gave up and we were walking back to the truck and we saw some off the trail we knew we came from. So deer can do some goofy things. Don't give up too early, but just like don't get ahead of yourself. So you might think you smoked that deer and you want to just go the direction you thought you saw him and find him. Don't do that. Don't give up on him too early either, especially if you think you got a good hit on him. Give that deer its due diligence and try to find blood until you just absolutely run out. If you think you killed that deer, then you can go back and maybe do a grid search, a body search for that deer in the daytime or at night. You could do one, but it's going to be easier if you do that in the day. So if you shot them in the morning, you can maybe do it that evening. If you shot them at night, wait till the next morning to go do it. I recommend a grid pattern. Walk down to whatever end of the property or wherever you're at as far as you can walk towards, you know, like the direction the deer you thought went. If you thought he went north and south, make this grid east and west. Then turn around and let's say you're walking west the first time you get to the property line or wherever you can get to and you didn't see him. Go to the end of your line of sight to the north and then turn around and walk back east and then just kind of keep that grid. And that's the best, most efficient way to do a body search for a deer if it comes down to that point. But just make sure you be disciplined in your blood tracking. Please don't get ahead of yourself. And more times than not, if you kill that deer, you'll find it in that case. Sometimes they will stop bleeding, but if they're dead, a lot of times you're going to find them if you just stay on that blood and you stay disciplined within that. That's going to really help with your recovery rates. Once you do find that deer, so you've done all of this stuff, you've followed all the advice, you've listened to all the podcasts and watched all the YouTube videos, and you got your bow and you got out there and you shot your deer and you killed him, you didn't see him go down, you blood trailed him, everything like you were supposed to do, you finally get to this deer, now what? Hey everybody, thanks for listening to another episode of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. If you've made it to this point, hopefully you're enjoying the show, and if you are, go over to our Facebook page and our Instagram. Give us a follow. It's Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group. That's Ridge Hunter Nation. You can go over there and answer a couple questions. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast or you watch any of our shows on YouTube or Carbon TV, you get in that group and just use it as your normal hunting group. Share your success, your failures, pictures, whatever you got. And we'll also give you some extra content in there. I'll ask questions on that, maybe do some surveys occasionally. And we'll also give you guys the opportunity to ask questions for any of our guests that we might have coming on, if we have them lined up in time and that's available. You'll find that at Ridge Hunter Nation. That's on Facebook. Our website is ridgehunteroutdoors.com. That's where you're going to see our scent line, Ridge Hunter Scents, our buck tarsal spray, doe tarsal spray, and our calming spray. All of our apparel is available on the website, and our food plot seed, when it is in stock, is available on the website too. If you want any of that stuff, make sure you use our discount code RHOPOD or full draw, all caps on either of those, no space, and you get 10% off your entire order. We also have our entire catalog of podcasts on the website, and our video series are available on there as well. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other audio platform, give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it lets you do. And that'll let you guys know when our episodes come out. They're not always as consistent as we want them to be, but we try to shoot for Monday and Friday. Sometimes it gets on a Tuesday or a Saturday maybe for an episode. And that way you'll know when they come out. It also really helps us without costing you anything. If you're listening to this on YouTube, hopefully you're already subscribed to the channel. If you're not, make sure you do that. If you're not listening to this on YouTube and you're not subscribed, make sure you go over there and do that at Ridge Hunter Outdoors, just like everything else. That's where you'll find our Fall Pursuit Show, Spring Strutting, all of our off-season vlogs will be on there, and much more. If you guys see a video or are listening to a podcast on there and you're enjoying it, just drop us a comment. Hey, good show. Really enjoyed it. Something simple. Give the video a like. That really, really helps us out. And again, it doesn't take much of your time at all. You can also find Fall Pursuit on Carbon TV, and Spring Strutting will be on there this spring as well. So make sure you go over to Carbon TV. They have a lot of great shows to offer, and ours will be on there also. Thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate you tuning in when you do. Now let's get back to the episode. Now you got to get them cleaned up. And that's when a lot of the real work starts, especially depending on where you're at. If you can't drive something up to them and just load them up and throw them on there, you got to drag them out. In some places on public land, maybe you're quartering them up and dragging them out. So watch some videos on how to do that. It's really pretty easy. I would recommend gutting that thing right away. I don't worry about leaving gut piles. Doesn't seem to bother the deer. They see dead animals all the time. So besides that, the vultures and the coyotes and the critters will have it cleaned up pretty quick anyway. As long as it's not like real close to your stand where you got to sit and smell it, I wouldn't worry about just leave that gut pile right there where you found the deer at. But it's going to be a lot lighter to drag out if you got it right there. And not only that, it's going to help keep the meat good for longer without being in a cooler or something like that, or without the hide being off of it. The sooner you can get those guts out, the sooner that deer will start cooling down, and the better the meat's going to be for it. Especially on a hotter evening like we've had here recently, like we always have in October and November from time to time, even in December sometimes, it gets up to maybe 60, 65 degrees. The sooner you get the guts out, the better. So make sure you do that. Then when you get them back, skinning and cleaning, if you didn't quarter them up out there, watch some more videos. Find something on the internet of how to do it. If you don't know how to do it, get a hold of us, and I'll tell you how to do all of that stuff. I'll point you in the right direction at least. Something you can watch. We're maybe going to do some of those videos as well, just for another resource for people. But get the hide off of that thing. You can hang them if you got a cool place to hang them. If you're not taking them to a meat locker or something, if you got a cooler, you can hang them up there with the hide on them for a few days and they'll be fine, but you don't want to leave it on there too long. Get the hide off of there. And the biggest thing I can tell you when you're skinning them out is the less hair you cut, the more you're going to do yourself a favor. The more hair you cut, the bigger the cleanup job is going to be. You're going to have more likelihood for having deer hair in your burger, or in your on your steaks, or on your roast, or whatever. So try not to cut the hair too much. Go in there from the inside out and cut that thing. Another big thing I'll say that I think a lot of people miss on their skinning videos is pulling is easier than cutting. So if your back can take it, skin out the hindquarters of that thing, cut the tailbone, and then pull till you can't pull, and then cut a little bit more, and then pull till you can't pull. It's going to really speed things up, and you're going to cut a lot less hair. You're going to cut a lot less meat if you do it that way. So that's just a quick pro tip, I guess, on skinning. Pulling is easier than cutting in most cases, especially, and if you're skinning that thing when it's warm, like it's fresh, you just dragged it in, put it on the skinning pole, and you're going in after it, you can almost pull the whole thing off without even having to cut. Score it, cut it again, you know, around the hindquarters, cut the, we always cut them just above the tarsal glands, around the leg bone there, the joint, and then go to pulling. That thing will come off super easy, super easy. When you do that, though, after you get them skinned out, wash them down with the water hose. Try to be as clean as possible. Again, even when you're gutting, try to keep the leaves and the dirt and the gravel and whatever out of them. Don't lay them on the ground or lay them on anything after you skinned them out. Anything that's dirty, once you do skin them, again, wash them down with the water hose, and then that's really going to make your stuff a lot cleaner. When you go to debone it, cut it up however you want to, cut those back straps out, cut the tenderloins out, whatever. It's going to be a lot cleaner if you go ahead and rinse that off after you get the skin in. It's going to get a lot of the hair off of it. Another thing you can do after you wash it with the hose is you can take a torch or a lighter or something and burn a lot of hair off of it as well. Anything you missed with the water hose, you can burn it off, and you're going to be doing yourself a big favor there too. So that is the last thing I got. We've hopefully got you all the way from not knowing much about hunting, not knowing how to get started, all the way now to at least having an idea of what it's going to be like after you shoot one and getting them wrapped up and in a freezer. I appreciate everybody who tuned in for this series. Hopefully it's helpful. Hopefully it'll be a good resource for years to come for people who are getting into hunting. Again, I said this on the last two, if you got someone who's new to it, send them these episodes. If you're new to it, hopefully these help. If they didn't, let us know. If you got any more questions, or anybody that is already into hunting, if we missed anything you think is big, send us a message at ridgehunteroutdoors@gmail.com is our email. Of course, you can reach out through our Facebook and our Instagram and whatever, our YouTube, comment on there. Anything you think we might have missed, or any questions you have if you are a new person to it, absolutely reach out to us, and we'll try to help you out the best we can. So that's all I got for this week, guys. Appreciate it that you're tuning into these. Hope it helped, and we will catch you on the next one.